News Talk on demand. Interruption free audio. Where you want it, when you want it.
Richard Brown in for John Gormley on this Thursday edition of John Gormley Live. Do you think you're being served well by your MLA? Are you happy with the way the Saskatchewan legislature is operating? Is the government and the opposition serving you properly? There is a sense that the political leaders in this province may have reached a new low in this spring session of the Saskatchewan legislature, that there has been so much rancor and so much vitriol and anger in this session, and that there is something going on between the Premier and Duane Lingenfelter. These guys know how to push each other's buttons like I've never seen. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. And then on May the 10th, of course, it erupted in now infamous shouting match in which Duane Lingenfelter referred to the Premier as that little thief from Swift Current, at which point the chair of that committee, it was a budget debate on Executive Council. 877-332-8255, 877-332-8255. And at that point is when Duane Lingenfelter called the Premier that little thief from Swift Current, and all hell broke loose after that. 877-332-8255. You happy with the way the Saskatchewan legislature is operating? Are they doing what you want to do? What are you going to say to your MLA when you see him this summer? Or her? And I assume you will, because they will be making the rounds of the barbecue circuits and the town suppers as the summer wears on. And they are going to be home in the next day or so, because the session ends today. Yesterday, of course, passing Bill 80, the Construction Labor Act, which changes the way unions operate in this province. There's the unions, at least some of them, very upset by that. And, of course, the other major piece of legislation, the Wildlife Habitat Protection Act, changes to that, which is going to allow thousands, maybe tens of thousands of acres to be sold off to ranchers who are already leasing it so they can run cattle on it. It'll protect some land, and others they're going to put in a we-don't-know pile, and they'll decide whether or not that land can be sold off or whether it, too, needs to be protected. Are you happy with the way the Saskatchewan legislature operated this session? 877-332-8255. Love to hear from you. Interesting that there have been, there seems to be more talk about what isn't getting done in the legislative session than actually what is. Rick and Moose Jaw, what do you think?
Hi, Richard. Rick Swenson, leader of the PC Party. I was in the legislature a number of times this session, sitting behind the bar as I can as a former member.
Yeah.
And I was in government and opposition, and I don't think I ever witnessed the personal vitriol quite the way it is now.
What do you think causes that? I mean, what is it that has flipped the switch?
Well, I think it's a combination. As I said, I was there for 10 and a half years through some very trying times in the 80s and early 90s. I think there's a level of arrogance by this premier that I have never seen in another premier. And there is also and I think Mr. Lingenfelter recognized this at his dinner the other night, that they need to transition from government to good opposition and come forward with more policy. What I observed from sitting on the floor is that the South Party government really doesn't care whether they do a lot of consultation or not.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the Wildlife Act, I can remember when we brought that particular legislation in back in the 80s, there was about 2.5 years of consultation. You know, lots of boots on the ground, people out talking to landowners, leasees. I mean, this thing just showed up in the legislature without anybody being talked to. And that's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Do you think it is because of the popularity of the premier, they're riding the coattails of his popularity?
And there's no question that without Brad Wall, that's a fairly shallow outfit. Well, I mean, you know, just go sit on the floor of the House, Richard, and observe. And in some ways that can be good for you in a political party, in some ways that's also a detriment. Mm-hmm. And it makes an easier target to shoot at. And obviously you saw the NDP opposition doing lots of that. Even members' statements, which usually are something to do with your constituency, are now directed at the premier.
Yeah.
And so maybe our system needs a little fixing.
But I don't know that the system's broken. I think what it is, and this is just my opinion, I don't think it's the system. I think it's the people playing in it. I think, as I've said, I've never seen two men who, when they look at each other, shoot daggers the way Premier Brad Wall and the NDP leader Dwayne Lingenfelter do.
Yeah, certainly. I never saw it with Blakeney and Devine or Blakeney and Romano or, you know, in opposition when I was leader of the opposition and Romano. I mean, yeah, you have your moments. You play act a little in there. It's great theater.
Yes.
But at the same time, you have to go back to the fundamentals of your beliefs, and there has to be reasoned debate on those fundamentals. And I don't think you're getting that in the current situation.
What do you think about the legislative session, about the bills that were passed?
Well, there wasn't much done in reality, and what was done was sort of done behind closed doors to begin with and not done on the floor of the House.
Yeah.
You know? I sat through the summer of 89, through the entire summer, debating the privatization of potash.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time it was done, there was nothing left to be said. You know, everybody, I remember guys talking for 10 hours.
Yeah.
But it was all left out on the floor, and you haven't seen that in this situation.
So what do you want to see in the fall? I asked this of our pundits in the last segment. What would you like to see happen in the fall? How do we improve what's going on in the legislature, Rick?
Number one, I think both of those parties, they need to go back out and start talking to people about start doing things for the right reasons, not political reasons.
Uh-huh.
You know, Saskatchewan's really on the cusp, Richard, of some potential. I believe the uranium issue was blown by the government because they didn't go about it for the right reasons. We'll shove South Power out there, and you know, that's both sides need to go back and go out and ask some questions. People, not worry about their politics, but you know.
Yeah.
What can the province do to really get a hold of some things?
I've only got a couple of seconds left, but what do you think the SAS party and the NDP need to do in order to regain the confidence of the people of this province, assuming they've lost it?
Well, I think they're going to have to go talk to people, but they're going to have to come in with a different demeanor.
Change
a totally
the attitude.
Different demeanor.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why, Richard, we should have some liberals and some greens and progressive conservatives in there to bring some honor back to the place.
Yeah. Well, it would you talk about a rodeo. There's a perfect recipe for one. Rick Swenson, leader of the PC Party, thank you for being
Thanks,
with
Richard.
Us. All right. I wasn't expecting that, but while I had him there, I figured we might as well pump him for what he had. And now you have that particular point of view as well. What do you think? Are you happy with the way the Saskatchewan legislature is operating? Do you think the government and the opposition are serving you properly? Got any advice? Any advice for your MLA? Any advice for your premier? Any advice for the leader of the New Democratic Party? I'm Richard Brown. In for John Gormley, this is News Talk Radio. Richard Brown in for John Gormley on John Gormley Live this Thursday here on News Talk Radio. We've been talking about this particular legislative session, whether or not it had stooped to new lows, or whether it's a continuation of the breakdown of the debate system in our legislature. There is an argument to be made that when one political party, having ruled for as long as it did, is then put into opposition, they don't know how to be an opposition party. They don't know how to be the loyal opposition, Her Majesty's loyal opposition, because they've governed for so long that they've had their way with us. And then when they're put in the position, then they have to, of trying to offer options other than what the government is preparing, they find themselves a bit wandery. And it may be that that's what it is. And there was some talk that perhaps what the New Democratic Party needs to do is focus on issues, less on personalities, come up with alternatives to what the SASC party is offering the people of Saskatchewan. And let the people of Saskatchewan make the decisions about who they trust and who they believe, and allow the force the political parties to present their platforms, and then let the people of the province vote. Ed in Saskatoon, what do you think?
I'm wondering about this. It's interesting how you're approaching this. About a year ago, Calvert was still in the official opposition before he stepped down. Then Olink came into power, or took over as official opposition. And things ever since then, they've been very personal attacks. It's just his style. And with Calvert, he was at least a little bit more diplomatic and a little easier and more reasonable to get along.
Do you think that Dwayne Lingenfelter is still finding his footing?
I think his footing's already there. Oh. That's his personality right from when he was still back even before he moved to Calgary. That was his style.
Yeah. So you think that's just the way he plays?
That's his style, yes.
Yeah, Ed, I appreciate it. So maybe it has become it is partially a policy issue, but maybe it is more to do with the personalities. And when you have these two personalities, the oil and water personalities of the premier and the leader of the Democratic Party, then maybe that starts to overshadow. I mean, when you look at the popularity of the premier in this province, it's over 60%. I don't have an exact figure in front of me. I think it's 63, but don't hold me to that. But when you have a premier who is as popular as Brad Wall is in this province, and you have a party who used to be in the government for so long and they're trying to get traction, and they're having so much trouble getting traction that it degenerates. I don't know. What do you think? 877-332-8255. 877-332-8255. Are you happy with the way the Saskatchewan legislature operated this session? Is the government, is the opposition serving you properly? I think if you look at the two political parties, in a sense, the Sask Party is, because it is relatively new to this province and is not one of the old line parties, it created, for a time here, it created this whole breath of fresh air. And that's why, and that may be one of the reasons why, with the direction it's going, then the New Democrats are having trouble finding their stride. Under the leadership of Dwayne Lingenfelter, they're having trouble putting it together, putting policies together that they can present. And if they're going to spend the next year putting policies together, then they're going to have it. That will give them the opportunity to put the platform together before the election in November. There is a question whether or not that's going to be soon enough, whether it should be sooner than that, so we could see it operate in the House and see the debate in the House on the issues. Landis and Tisdale, what do you think?
Yeah, hi, Richard. I just wanted to agree with Jerry and Ed, and the whole problem is Lingenfelter. It was a great day for Saskatchewan when he left, and it was a terrible day when he came back, and for them to elect him leader was a dark, dark day for Saskatchewan, and it's going to be this way until they get rid of him, and the sooner they figure that out, the better the province will be. Like, he is a terrible man. Like, all he knows how to do is call people names, and he comes up with no fresh ideas of his own at all.
Yeah. So you're laying the blame squarely on his desk.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely on his shoulders. He should have never came back.
Okay. Appreciate the call. Fran in White City, what do you think?
Well, I think there's blame to be had on both sides. I am particularly disturbed, though. What I see is a lack of consultation and listening to people. I phoned yesterday about Bill 80, and I am opposed. But I also want to talk about the wildlife habitat. That minister seems, when I watch Question Period, that she really doesn't have much feeling for the people in this province, almost holding the ideas of people that oppose her in contempt or with a lot of disregard, and that's not helpful. Yeah. I mean, Mr. Swenson ahead of me, he made some good points. I think about Colin Maxwell, the minister in the Devine government that brought that legislation in. Like, there's this great rush, we're going to do it, and we'll do it come hell or high water. And that's not the way we should be operating. We should try to bring people together. And I agree that Lingenfelter, some of his comments are go over the edge. But also, I think he got kind of a lot of miserable comments about coming back from Alberta. Anybody else that came back from Alberta there were people that welcomed them with open arms and say, oh, good, you came back. But when he did, well, all he gets is a bunch of crap over it.
So yeah, that's
it's not very fair. And I think both of them need to say, look, you, the people, the MLAs that we elected, people that serve in government, are our servants. They aren't there to puff themselves up and make themselves look important.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments, and thanks very much. Bob in Saskatoon, what do you think?
I think that there it's time to think about appointing a Speaker of the House rather than electing them.
Oh, I see. And the reason for that would be what?
Okay. You know, like with the kind of histrionics we've had this session, like, it's going to get to the point where the current setup just isn't going to work. The Speaker is going to have to do something that, as a partisan, you know, like he's one of the members of the House, basically.
Yeah.
And he's a member of a particular party, and he would have to do things that hurt his party.
Yeah. Yeah, it may be a time when we take a different kind of a look at it. Bob, I'm running out of time. I do appreciate the call, and thanks for putting that that kernel of an idea in our head about us appointing the Speaker rather than electing them. Coming up in the next half hour, they're going to build a mosque 2 blocks from New York City's Ground Zero, where the World Trade Center buildings were destroyed by those crazy terrorists. A mosque 2 blocks from World Trade? Yep, we're going to talk about that. I'm Richard Brown, in for John Gormley. This is News Talk Radio. Richard Brown in for John Gormley on John Gormley Live this Thursday. There's a plan afoot in Lower Manhattan in New York, about 2 blocks from the site of the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center, which is now a giant 16-acre hole in the ground, to build a mosque. Yep, a mosque, 2 blocks from Ground Zero. It has set off an emotional debate in the city. The executive director of the Muslim Society says that it's going to be great. It'll have a real community feel. It'll celebrate the pluralism of the United States as well as the Islamic religion. It's a $100 million project. On the other hand, there's a retired city detective in New York who worked at Ground Zero, and he says Lower Manhattan should be made into a shrine for the people who died there. It breaks my heart for families who have had to put up with this. I understand they're building it in a respectful way, but it just shouldn't be there. I wanted to get a little perspective on this, and so we've asked Christopher Liebig to join us. He's a published author, a well-respected defense attorney, and coincidentally an expert in racial profiling. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Richard.
I guess to try and help those of us in Canada who aren't as close to that situation, give me some sense of how this kind of a thing could happen, that a mosque could be possibly built in an area that is so close to what has become this huge representation of this animosity between the radical Islam and that which is so American.
Yeah, it's a good question, but I mean, here, people are making a bit of a big deal about nothing here, I would say, Richard. One is that there's already a mosque less than a couple hundred feet away from where they propose to build the new, albeit fancier and bigger one. There's more than 100 mosques in the New York area, multiple hundreds, and, you know, how it could come to be is that they paid for it and decided to build it. I mean, I think the protest is an emotional one, it's a political one. But, you know, there's just really no way to stop it.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's $100 million. Yeah, it's $100 million project. At least that's what I've read in the research, and they're trying to raise the money for it. There, you know, on one side you can say that that location in Lower Manhattan along the Hudson should be a shrine to the 3,000 who died. And the other side is saying, well, you know, is it time now, 9 years later, nearly 10 years later, to try and heal these wounds, to try and get past this? How do New Yorkers do that?
I don't know. Here's a really interesting piece about it. The linchpin of this is that, was Islam responsible for 9/11? That's really what people are talking about. And right now, even, you know, the Attorney General of the U.S. is discussing this issue publicly. Yes, a small wing of radical Islam was responsible, but it's not as if, you know, a foreign national enemy is building a shrine to their country in a time of war near Ground Zero. And so, right. I mean, I think what Muslims do not accept is that they are the enemy. So I think they would dispute the fact that it's even a blight on the victims of 9/11. You know, 300 of whom, I believe, around that many were Muslims.
That's right. Yeah.
But the other side of it is, oh, come on now, let's face it. You know, we all know that there is something of a religious war going on. And, you know, I think it is better to get beyond that.
Yeah. I think this is a point that needs to be underlined, and you just made it, and that 300 of the victims who died in World Trade were indeed Muslim.
Correct.
You know, and that part of Manhattan, because it was the trade and the financial center, there were people from all over the world, and Canadians as well, who died there. And so I think it's a question of, can America, and particularly New York, get past the point of looking at everyone who is Islamic as the enemy?
I hear you. I think that's where, you know, some of the racial profiling comes in. Now, of course, I'm just going to make the other side of it quickly. Of course, if there is somebody bent on terrorism, that person blends in better on a square block area where there are a lot of Muslims, no doubt. That is a practical concern that maybe would be of concern. But that's different than the emotional and sort of political symbolic argument.
Yeah. Is there a risk that for those who are, and let me take this side, is there a risk that because there may be radical Americans on the extreme who would see this and they would target that mosque because of what it represents?
No doubt. I mean, we've seen some of that. I think what that comes back down to is that, you know, New York has probably the most vigilant police force for terrorism. We saw that, how lucky we were, you know, last month.
Yeah.
And also vigilant citizens. But frankly, anything could happen anytime, you know, and that's the scary part. And I think that's kind of what's driving a lot of these fears.
Yeah.
We all know that the people that want to come to worship at that mosque have no ill feelings or ill intent. Most of them. Now, that's most of them. It's the thing.
Yeah.
What if there are a few? And, you know, we've been really lucky, and we've had some great law enforcement work.
What about, will this raise any, like, racial profiling issues? I mean, will they walk down the street and go past this thing and go, well, anybody involved in this must want to do me harm? And it will create that even greater sense of that something is, you know, that something is going to attack me as an American in my very home because they have built this $100 million mosque.
Well, that's certainly not the real intention of the people building it. But I will say this. I mean, you know, because of the fact that almost everybody that's been associated with an Islamic terrorist attack has been a young Muslim male from the Middle East or from Pakistan, that, of course, that is the group that's looked at, and that's the group that's watched by the police, and, you know, perhaps should be, as long as they're not harassed. You can't stop police from watching people. So if that population increases in a square block area, the police are going to watch them.
Yeah.
No question. I mean, I think we all agree they should. The racial profiling comes in when, well, are you going to stop them? Are you going to force them to answer questions? Now, that's the more volatile issue. But in terms of police presence and watching people, you would think, of course.
Yeah.
You know,
given they're having so much trouble trying to get this monument built, I mean, there's been so much debate going on about what they're going to do with that location, and they've come up with several designs and everything. And this whole idea that it should be a shrine, I wonder if on a visceral level people are saying, you know, okay, I don't mind a mosque being here. I just don't want it so damn close to where so many people died in this terrible terrorist attack that was launched by radical Islamists.
It makes sense, but, you know, maybe this is just an opinion, but, you know, when they build whatever they're going to build on Ground Zero, which is going to be something of a shrine, it's going to be something of a symbol. That symbol is going to include the fact that Muslims were killed there, too. And, I mean, you know, they can just as well have a Christian symbol nearby. They can just as well have symbols of other religions. That's America, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everything carries a danger, but I think the danger is worth it. They should... You know, having the thing this block versus 10 blocks away, you know, I think people should be able to get past it. That doesn't mean that they're not entitled to their opinion, but it's probably not the reason not to do a $100 million project, which in other ways is going to help the city, too.
Are you, you know, we're here, we are 9 years, almost 10 years past September 11th. Are you over it, personally?
No, I don't think anybody could say they're over it. I mean, it definitely changed things in what I do with criminal defense. It changed things there. And, you know, we see a lot of those kinds of cases. You think about it, the news every day, that's what everyone's wondering about. Yeah. We're in two wars. You know, no,
yeah,
not even close. It'll be part of the next few elections, if not way beyond that, because, you know, well, frankly, we're at war.
Yeah.
I mean, this country is spending lives and money because of 9/11 right now.
Well, yeah, but when you say that, though, Chris, then you got to think about, okay, if this is a nation at war, should they maybe not wait until these wars are settled before they spend $100 million on this mosque?
I'd say, and here's the thing, comes back again to the linchpin point that our attorney general is talking about on TV, you know, as we speak, maybe. Our wars are not against Islam. This is what he's wanting to say.
Right.
Other people want to say something different, and, you know, it's a dicey issue.
Yeah.
If the wars are against Islam, then no doubt. I mean, that would be like a foreign enemy building something, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not. I think the position of the U.S. government is, and I would agree should be, is we are not.
Yeah. Yeah, I
in a war against Islam.
I appreciate your input on this. I appreciate your perspective. Chris Liebig, he's a well-respected criminal defense attorney, a published author, and an expert on racial profiling. I appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
What do you think? I don't know. Should they be building a mosque? And if this is huge. This is like $100 million they're going to spend on this thing. Should they be building it, like, within eyesight of the World Trade Center, of where the World Trade Center attack happened in New York? Or are we overreacting? I mean, should we really be putting this behind us and moving forward? Not only Americans putting it behind them moving forward, but we in the West getting past the fact that we're not at war with Islam, we're at war with crazy radicals, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. I'd like to hear your opinion on that. I'm Richard Brown in for John Gormley. This is News Talk Radio. Richard Brown in for John Gormley. John Gormley live this Thursday here on News Talk Radio. They're going to build a mosque, and there's lots of them in the city of New York, in Manhattan and in the boroughs. But they're going to build one near New York's Ground Zero. And this isn't just like a church mosque, kind of a, you know, you see them with the dome, and this is huge. It's a 15-story community center. It's a mosque. There's a performance art center as part of this. There is a swimming pool in this. There are public spaces in this mosque. $100 million they are going to try and raise to build this. And you can, if you stand on the location of where the old World Trade Center towers used to be, you can pretty much see it from there. It's only a couple of blocks away. Not that far from one of the oldest churches in America, which was only two blocks away from World Trade. Is it appropriate? 877-332-8255. 877-332-8255. Is it appropriate to be building a mosque of this size, this $100 million community center? It's not just a small mosque. It isn't just like a little church. This thing is like 15 stories high. It's got a gym, swimming pool, performing arts center, then the mosque, public spaces. Is it too much for that space? Are we as Westerners past that point in terms of our healing after the attacks on World Trade that we could accept something like that near what has become a shrine to the 3,000 people who died, some of whom were Canadian, 300 of whom were Islamic, who died in the World Trade Center attack by those wacko terrorists? There are those in New York City who are adamantly opposed to it. There's a fellow by the name of, it doesn't matter what his name is. He's a retired city detective in New York. He says, it breaks my heart for the families who have to put up with this. I understand they're building it in a respectful way, but it just shouldn't be down there. Another opinion. The 9/11 terrorists did this in the name of Islam. It's a sacred ground where these people died, where my brother was murdered, and to be in the shadows of that religion is just hypocritical and sacrilegious. Should they really be building a $100 million mosque and Islamic center within eyesight of the World Trade Center? 877-332-8255. 877-332-8255. You know, we are at war with but not with Islam. We are at war with those who are terrorists in the name of Islam, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban. We've had just in this week, we've had the highest ranking Canadian, a colonel, die in this battle against these crazed terrorists. And, you know, we have had more than 140 Canadians die in the service of their nation and in our service battling these terrorists. What do you think? Is it appropriate? Do we need to get past it? Is there a healing here that we should be considering? We're 9 years past world trade. We're not that far past, and we're still battling wars. United States fighting two wars, one in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. And, of course, we're in Afghanistan. An interesting observation from someone here. They said, consider the Oklahoma City bombing. Timothy McVeigh. Remember that? He was a lunatic. What if you built, and he was a right-wing Christian, by the way, what if you built a Christian church near the site of the Oklahoma City bombing? What's the difference? It could be just the same thing. So is it time that we heal? I don't know. It's something you may want to consider, may want to think about. You know, the city of New York, and having worked there as I did, and I'm back and forth there a lot, it's the most multicultural city in the world, perhaps, except for perhaps London. And there are those who say it is time that we put this past us. Let those who want to create a shrine and rebuild world trade, let them do it. But as Westerners, we need to get past this. We need to not look at every person who is Islamic as someone who is an enemy. And it may be that it's time that we're coming up on 10 years since the attack, and maybe it's time that we considered that. So they're going to try. They still have to raise the money for this mosque, by the way, the $100 million. It shouldn't actually be that difficult to put that kind of money together in that community. But as I say, in New York, it is such a multicultural community that you'll bump elbows on any given street at any given time with people from nations all over the world. And you hear languages spoken that you don't even recognize. And so maybe because it is that kind of a multicultural nation, it is a place where people should be coming together. Perhaps if you're going to start the healing process in terms of the nation, in terms of Islam and the West, maybe that's the place to do it. It's the place where it all started. Maybe that's the place where the healing has to come from. Maybe that's the place where it's the perfect place to build that mosque. $100 million on a mosque, and in that time, they are going to try and heal. One of the executive directors of the Muslim Society in New York, she says it's a center that is led by Muslims, but it serves the community as a whole. And it was a quote from her. It will have a real community feel to celebrate the pluralism of the United States, as well as in the Islamic religion. It will also serve as a major platform for amplifying the silent voice of the majority of Muslims who have nothing to do with extremist ideologies. It will counter the extremist momentum. So if healing is going to take place, maybe it needs to start at the same place that the first terrible agony, the first terrible attack happened. Anyway, just a couple little thoughts. Coming up in the next half hour of this program, something that's, we should have done this in Bugs Day, but this is driving me crazy. You've seen the video of the little 8-year-old girls in this dance competition in Pomona, California? I am so angry at these parents. We're going to talk about this coming up. I'm Richard Brown, in for John Gormley. This is News Talk Radio.